This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, it's the economy, stupid. We know the finance minister's economic plan, it's now being referred to as Tito's plan, was the talk of the World Economic Forum meeting in Africa last week in Cape Town. It's entitled Economic Transformation, Inclusive Growth and Competitiveness Towards an Economic Strategy for South Africa, and it was prepared by the Economic Policy Unit inside Treasury. Some have called it a rehash of old ideas. Some have welcomed it as practical and tangible in the manner it deconstructs deliverable action, while some are worried about process. Well, in tonight's roundtable, we hope to discuss some of the proposals and what the likelihood is of this plan ever getting off the ground, because we don't have a deficit of plans in the country, that's for certain. Let's introduce tonight's panelists. Firstly, Neva Makgetla, who's a senior economist at TIPS. She's also very well known, published widely, regularly in the Business Day. Until 2015, she was Deputy Director General for Economic Policy in the Economic Development Department. And before that, she was the lead economist for the Development Planning and Implementation Division of the DBSA. Neva, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Also on the line, we welcome Kaz Kuvadia, the acting CEO of Business Unity South Africa and formerly head of the Banking Association of South Africa. Kaz, always a pleasure.
Thank you, and I am still MD of the Banking Association.
Wearing many hats, Kaz. I don't know how you get through all of that work. And lastly, Dr. Justin Fasahi, research specialist at the Human Sciences Research Council, with a focus on urban economics, development economics, and applied microeconomic research, and who's also previously Director of Economic Planning, Policy and Research in the Department of Economic Development in the Eastern Cape. Dr. Fasahi, Justin, can I call you Justin? Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. You can call me Justin.
Neva, before we get started on the details, and I think I'm just going to put this out to all of my panelists tonight, starting with you, Neva, the rose amongst the thorns. I'd just like your opening thoughts on this Treasury document.
It obviously there's many good ideas in there. I think part of the problem is there's too many small good ideas and no sense of an overall strategy. And I do worry that it was put out, you know, that for government to put out a discussion document when there's not a degree of consensus within government is quite a risky thing to do.
As we saw from Msibisi Jonas today, a worry about a process there. Kaz, your opening thoughts broadly on the document?
Yeah, look, I this document is probably about 2 years old. and there are good thoughts in it. There's good suggestions on what to do, but basically very little new, to be quite honest. But it's important that it's put out by Treasury. That Treasury is actually putting these issues on the table, and actually indicating that this is what we need to do, and that there's an urgency to actually begin to deal with these issues. As far as the process is concerned and so on, you know, sometimes when it's difficult to actually get consensus in government and consensus amongst a whole range of stakeholders, sometimes it might be good to put the cat amongst the pigeons and actually put it out to the public and ask the public what the public thinks. So I think that in a way, it's good that the discussion document has been put out. The public can start thinking about it and talking about it together with stakeholders that usually do it behind closed doors. So let's get the debate going. But I think there is a sense of urgency to start implementing.
And we will come back to that point. Justin, your opening thoughts?
I mean, I agree with the previous two speakers that it's really good that we at least have something on the table to have a discussion about. If I think back to the last concrete proposal that we've had, it's hard to think. Perhaps it was the National Development Plan. We've spoken about things such as radical economic transformation in the past, think it's important that someone put something on the table, and it enables us to to have a discussion. But as Neve has mentioned, it is a bit unfortunate that the content of the document seems to have been lost out of focus in terms of the politicking around who it represents and the process that was followed. So, I mean, I think it's still redeemable in the sense that it was always put out for public comment, so it's not a closed document. But I think it's very necessary that we have these sorts of discussions.
Neva, to come back, let's start with that first issue of process and finding consensus and building a vision and compacting. Don't we do this to death in South Africa? Isn't this so urgent? Don't we actually just need someone to show leadership and take a decision either way?
No, I agree, but I'm not sure this is how to do it. The problem for me is this. If you see government as engaging to try and show that kind of leadership, I think it's just confusing if you put out a policy where you have not even you look at the number of departments that would have to implement this, and they haven't actually been consulted. They haven't bought some of these. They've bought into some of them. They haven't. But if you don't have that, you know, if I'm negotiating with someone and somebody puts out a document for discussion, which has not been mandated at any level, you can say yes, let's just have the discussion. It can also cause confusion. It can raise expectations, and then you're not able to meet those expectations. So for me, it's not so much about the democratic process as about how do you manage a policy discussion. I mean, I totally agree. We need a policy discussion. I'm not sure this is the best way to get there. And I have to say, if you want a discussion, to put out this kind of shopping list makes it very difficult. Because one of my problems with this document is that the overall strategy is actually really hard to figure out. It sort of tweak this, tweak that, tweak the other thing. But you don't get a sense of what are the real changes that will change people's lives. Is any of this on a scale that will make a big difference? And some of the stuff that they want, and I have to say this is unfortunately typical of economists, they say, this is the first best solution. They don't say, if that's not viable, what's the second best? And I think it would have been more useful to have that kind of discussion as well.
Kaz, when we look at the policy in its totality, I tend to agree from the thrust of lacking a coherent vision. But where I might differ with you, Neva, maybe you can come back to me on this point, is that for me it promises micro reforms that speak to the issues that business leaders on my show chat to all about, labor, the micro reforms we need to see around our trade policy, around visa requirements. The recommendations throughout the network industries are all very important. I'll pick out one, for example. Mandating an independent water regulator would go some way to satisfy private sector investors that they can contract and get involved to supply water infrastructure in a public-private partnership model with some confidence. So I think collectively, do they make up a vision? Maybe not. But broken down into small component parts, I think you're going to make some people in different sectors very, very happy. Do we have to have an overarching vision at this point, Kaz?
Look, I think that an overarching vision would help, but I'm not too sure we have the time to interact and consult. And this is one of our problems in the country, that we have to consult with a broad range of stakeholders. Some of whom have very, very different ideological approaches and ideological outlooks toward economic growth and development. And so one can go through that process. But I think where I do agree with you is that this document actually does allude to some of the sort of shorter and in some instances even immediate action steps that can be taken, that need not be controversial ideologically and so on, but would actually raise confidence, begin to actually create some amount of certainty. And that's what we need right now. We need to actually instill confidence that we are taking our crisis seriously, that we are going to do some small thing that will give investors confidence to at least start talking to us and looking at us from a point of view of investment, and where we actually begin to leverage off some of our competitive strengths, like tourism. So, I mean, the visa issue, it's common cause that the current visa regulations are an impediment to us actually leveraging off the competitive advantage that we have in tourism. Get rid of that. You know, and if those small things that we
those decisions we need to take that could have a big, fairly immediate impact, and that begins to raise confidence.
And there's another one as well, Justin, maybe you can comment on this. The red tape impact assessment bill, that was rejected by Parliament on procedural grounds. Treasury says that could quite easily be revisited. And if you look at it, the bill requires all departments and self-regulatory agencies to reduce red tape by 25% over 5 years. Surely, that is the kind of non-ideological quick win that can assist small businesses and demonstrate commitment to entrepreneurs. The President said at the beginning of this year or towards the end of last year with Jack Ma at the Job Summit and the Investment Summit that we want to make heroes of our entrepreneurs. This is one way of doing it. How could this be a bad thing?
Look, it would be great for us to wave our magic wand and transform the South African economy overnight. But we know that it's complicated, and there isn't a silver bullet. And I do think that a lot of small things in a lot of different places are needed. Yet at the same time, there are big structural problems to our economy. And if you just have to think about the fact that, you know, roughly 3 out of 10 people aren't working, you know that there's a crisis going on. So I think that this kind of tinkering has its place, and I think that it's really important. Is it enough? I think that's open for debate. But I certainly think that there are many sensible ideas in this document. I think it's long overdue for us to be, putting the economy in the limelight.
Yeah, absolutely, front and centre. Neva, when you look at what is good in this document, what stands out for you? Let's put aside the process issue and the fact that perhaps it doesn't have a broad sweeping vision that can take everyone up onto the mountain, show them the promised land. When you look individually at the micro reforms, trade policy, that's been a key issue of our industrial policy package for some time, and it recommends the rationalizing of the IPAP, the Industrial Policy Action Plan. Do you agree with that? Do you think we need to be more targeted and focused to see success with the IPAP?
You know, my problem is this. We can all cherry pick the bits we like. This is why I'm not happy with not having, I'm not saying a vision. I'm saying a broad strategy that sets some clear priorities. If we were serious, and Kath, I'd like to know what you think about this. If we were serious about having something that would reassure business, I would have thought 4 or 5 projects that are really serious that we need to actually push through would be more important. I mean, obviously starting with ESCOM, but then I agree about the visa thing, you know, and maybe fixing some of the trade issues, but to me, and some of the other infrastructure issues. But my problem with this thing is that we won't be, government will not socially or politically be able to implement much of what's in there. And so you're going to end up actually raising expectations and then dashing them. So yes, of course there's a lot of good things in there. There's a lot of things in there I disagree with. I mean, let me take one more example. Sorry, but I'm taking time. This issue of regulators. Every regulator we've had has been a failure at some level. And the reason is, I would argue, we don't have capacity to run independent regulators and maintain the departments and have business have the capacity it needs. So to me, basically their solution to everything is bring in a regulator. It worries me that, you know, that those regulators will end up like a CASA.
Well-capacitated, independent regulators.
Where are we going to get the capacity? I would argue it's just, there's a systemic reason we failed, which is we don't have, as a society, the capacity to do that.
Kaz, I'm going to hand it over to you because Neva did put that to you.
No, I agree with Neva, and certainly in our comments on the document, which we will give in, is that it does not address a level of readiness of state institutions and regulators and so on to actually manage some of these. And I think the document and what's mentioned in the document certainly does not detract from some of the major issues that need to be dealt with, like ESCOM, for instance. It certainly does not detract from what we've been pushing quite hard for, to say that let's look at how, even if it's with some sort of private sector assistance, let's look at how we can bring expertise to bear to structure some of the critical priority infrastructure projects so that we can actually bring them to market and we can bid for them. Because it's not, you know, if you look at the renewable energy tranches, there was sufficient money in the markets to actually bid for those projects and fund those projects. And so, you know, it does not detract from some of the stuff that's been on the table for quite some time and that we undoubtedly need to do. But I think what to me is important is that, so we've been, as business, pushing away and chipping away with government to say that, look, these are the things that we need to do. These are totally in your ambit. And if you actually do this, we can begin to raise confidence while we also plug away at the bigger issues. I think what is useful here is that it's National Treasury that's actually echoing to a certain extent what needs to be done. And so to me, the message that goes out is that government is beginning to take seriously some of the action items that need to be now taken. And I think that some of these can be actually actioned without having to go through too much consultation and getting stakeholders on board and so on, because they will just have an immediate or pretty short-term impact on getting some sort of economic growth going, getting some sort of confidence going, which everybody agrees needs to be done.
One looks at a quick win, for example, in Spectrum, and you think, okay, well, that I know has been very heavily contested in terms of the WOAN and how much Spectrum is going to go into a state-owned WOAN, and immediately we saw Sipho Maseko come out and question the bona fides of the document on the basis of that. So, yes, there are some thorny issues, but within the bill, I mentioned that red tape reduction bill as a very easy one, a very quick one. For me, the elephant in the room, and it isn't really addressed sufficiently in this document, there is mention of collective bargaining and how that inherently isn't fair for parties who are agreement or in agreement to collective bargaining, very often big labor and big business, imposing those agreements on their smaller competitors. But the bigger elephant in the room has to be how we deal with productivity and competitiveness. And if you look at it in the South African manufacturing context, and perhaps, Justin, you can pick up on this, our labor productivity has remained broadly flat since 2011, while wages have been rising. So that means firms have to pay workers more for the same output that they produce, and clearly firms have to remain price competitive. That margin can't whittle away forever. It's not sustainable, and it's clearly behind some of the premature deindustrialization that we've seen, along with Eskom. How do we tackle that?
Well, maybe just to comment that, you know, wages are one of the inputs that go into competitiveness. And, of course, they play a bigger part in certain sectors like agriculture. But, you know, the research generally finds, you know, not too much ground for saying that if we just make our labor regime more flexible, it'll solve our unemployment problem. I mean, I think there are bigger structural issues that are going on. So I think that also, given our political context, it's a bit of a dead end. I would think that we need to focus on other areas to help our competitiveness. One of them that is comes into the limelight is around services, partly because the service economy has done much better than the manufacturers. But I'm wary of having a discussion as if they're two separate things. I mean, a competitive service industry is needed to help manufacturers. So if you think about modern global value chains, most companies capture a lot of the value through activities such as research and development, advertising, branding, position manufactured goods. So certainly, it's both the tradable manufacturing sector that could do with a more competitive, supportive environment, and I think that comes through in the plan. I think on one of the first points is around modernizing network services. I think that's a welcome addition in the plan, is to focus on the role of services in the economy in general.
Neva, as we come to our concluding comments and your final thoughts, the Treasury has perhaps rather cleverly forced the hand of cabinet ministers to take sides here by releasing this document without going through the normal processes. Perhaps reformers on the one hand and those who are resisting those reforms on the other. It seems like we're heading for a clash in the whole battle of ideas or balance of ideologies inside government.
That thing's been going on forever. I think the bigger problem is that whether this document, this kind of document where you have sort of a long shopping list, it's not the first we've seen. And the real risk is that because they're not prioritizing what are the key actions here, the departments cherry-pick the ones they wanted to do anyways. So you're thinking about spectrum. I don't know if that will go anywhere just because of this document. It's been so contested. What I think would be useful would be for instance, you know, if BUSA were to come up with a really short list, you know, is the visa thing the critical thing that would help with confidence? What are the other, you know, five or six projects they see as more important? If we can highlight those, then it becomes easier to come up with a serious debate and discussion about how to take them forward, and we could see action. Mm. What worries me about this kind of document is that it becomes too easy, you know, for people to cherry pick what they would have done anyways, and the really important things fall off the table.
Kaz, BUSA to produce five or six quick wins. I know the Public Private Growth Initiative is already looking at 22 different sectors that need
fixing. I mean, BUSA is definitely working on three or four quick wins and three or four critical stuff that we need to do, and we will be engaging. We are engaging with government on those at the moment. I agree with Neva, and those sort of say that, look, if we can get the following done, this is what business can do, and this is the sort of stuff that we believe can actually begin to kickstart the economy.
And get the economy engaged in the right gear. Justin, your concluding thoughts?
Maybe just to pick up on the fact that I think that export competitiveness and regional growth is certainly something that we need to unlock for our future. I think the previous caller was talking about the construction sector. It's a good example of where South Africa has capabilities and skills which could service growing cities in the rest of Africa, and yet our construction firms are going in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
We do have opportunities into the rest of Africa and certainly trying to enhance regional competitiveness in a way which benefits both parties. It's not just about us exporting abroad, it's also opening our own borders up. But I think that's an important point for discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Against the backdrop of the xenophobic violence, important to justify that. Dr. Justin Fasaki, Research Specialist at the HSRC, thank you very much. And thanks to Neva Makgetla, two Senior Economists at the Trade and Industrial Policy Strategies Unit, TIPS, and Kaz Kavadia, the Acting CEO of BUSA. That's a wrap from the Classic Business Team tonight. Thanks to sound engineers Mataba Tabara Debe and Mwanda Lorbe back in Cape Town, and producer Andres Mahlangu.